Welcome to the Business Coach Podcast, an advice-oriented series that tackles the top issues and opportunities facing Canada's small businesses. I'm your host, Ian Portsmouth, the editor of Profit Magazine, and we've developed this podcast in cooperation with BMO, Bank of Montreal. Whether you're getting ready to sell your own business, merely thinking of starting a business, or fall somewhere in between, business valuation is a crucial subject for you. Why? Of course, the value you build into your business impacts the price you might sell it for, but it also influences other keys to success, such as attracting financing or starting an employee share ownership plan. However, for a lot of Canadian entrepreneurs, building business value is an afterthought, and many overestimate just what their companies are worth. You don't want to fall into that trap. So I'm pleased to be joined by John Warrilow. John has built and exited four companies during his entrepreneurial career. Most recently, he sold Warrilow & Company, a boutique consultancy helping big business sell to small business, to the Corporate Executive Board, a Washington, D.C.-based research and advisory firm that trades on the New York Stock Exchange. John is also the author of Built to Sell, Creating a Business That Can Thrive Without You. John is a proud Canadian, but today he joins me from his home in Aix-en-Provence, France. John, welcome to the Business Coach Podcast.
Thanks, Ian. Nice to be with you.
So, John, what made you want to write Built to Sell and dedicate so much of your time to helping others build more valuable companies? You've sold four companies. I presume you're living comfortably in Provence. So what's the mission here?
Yeah, you know, one of the companies that I sold was a research business. We focused on surveying small business owners. And one of the things I found was that there was this huge percentage of business owners that wanted to sell, something like 50% over the next 10 years. But when I looked deeper into the data, only 1% or so actually successfully sell each year. So there's this big gap between the percentage that want to sell and those that do. I thought sharing some experiences and providing some tips on how to do that might be helpful.
So tell us a little bit about Built to Sell, your book.
It's focused on a fictitious business owner. You can think of Michael Gerber's The E-Myth as a bit of a model where the owner decides that he wants to sell his business and goes to see a mentor, and the mentor says, look, your business isn't really sellable. And the reason it's not sellable, the reason so many real businesses are not sellable, is that they're too highly dependent on the owner. And that's really the acid test of whether you've got a business that's sellable. Is if you pull the owner out, is the business going to continue to succeed, thrive, and grow? I often say the best acid test for your business is to go on vacation. And if it grows or, you know, kind of continues to thrive without you there, you've probably got a pretty sellable business. If it falls apart, you know that you don't have a sellable business at its current state.
Now, again, the name of your book is Built to Sell. So what is the fundamental difference, if there is one, between a company that has been intentionally built to sell and one that is built with different ends in mind?
Well, it's a great question. You know, I hear a lot about lifestyle businesses. And I guess at the end of the day, you know, if you build your business as a lifestyle endeavor, then you don't have to do a lot of the hard work on building it to sell. I mean, I knew a guy up in Sudbury who had a business that supplied one of the mines up there, and he used his business as a little bit like a piggy bank. I mean, he had a plane that he loved to fly, and that was a business expense. He had snowmobiles that were important to the business. He had lots of toys that were part of the business. And so really, I would argue that his business was more of a lifestyle business. You know, he used it as a little personal sort of piggy bank. And I think that's great. I think that's one of the ways to build a company is, you know, it should serve the needs of the owner. If that's the needs of the owner, then great. I think there's another way to build a company, and that is that it, you know, you want to make it as strategic value to somebody else. And that's where you're going to get, obviously, the highest price for your business. If it's more valuable in someone else's hands than it is in your hands. You know, when I talk about strategic value, I'm talking about, you know, think of a company with lots of customers. If you've got a great product that they could sell to those customers, then there's, you know, an immediate strategic value there for if you've got lots of customers. The inverse is also true. You know, if you, the owner, have lots of customers and they have, you know, the acquirer has a product, they might look at you and say, wow, your business is an attractive candidate because we can have a new channel to bring our product to market.
So in that case, would it be fair to say that a business built where strategic value is a primary metric is going to be more competitive in its marketplace than one that is built to generate revenue or generate profit?
Depends how you define competitive. I guess, you know, the degree to which it's inoculated from its competitive threats from other businesses, I think, yeah, the companies that focus on something, I generally talk about that they've got to meet three criteria. It's a business that has to sell something that's teachable to employees, or you can program technology to deliver it. It's got to be teachable. It's got to be valuable. In other words, it's not commoditized. It's something unique in the marketplace. It's defendable. It's kind of Warren Buffett's, the moat around the business is thick and defendable. And it's also repeatable, so there's a reoccurring revenue to the business. And I call that the trifecta of scale. If you can get those three things built into your business, it's teachable to your employees, it's valuable to your customers, and it's repeatable. That's the trifecta. That's when you're going to get, I think, both the most competitive business, least susceptible to other competitors, and also the most valuable. One of the things I really have an allergic reaction to is requests for proposal. I think, if your business is built around responding to RFPs, I think it means that you haven't done some of the heavy lifting associated with actually creating something that's so unique in the marketplace that people can't find it, other places. I was asked to provide some advice for a company that's in the business of responding to requests for proposal for paper. The 8.5-11 paper you stick in your printer or your photocopier. I couldn't think of a worse business to be in. I mean, there's no other criteria on which to make a buying decision based on price. So, in that business, I would have said, look, you've got to change your model so you're not responding to RFPs and making, 0.3% margin on your orders. You've got to have some sort of reoccurring subscription model where people can, for a fixed annual fee, you'll supply them with as much paper as they want. You'll proactively, preventively go in and supply them with paper. I mean, anything other than responding to RFPs, that's a mug's game.
John, earlier you said that a lot of the value in a business can reside in the entrepreneur himself or herself. Is there a way to gauge just how valuable you are to your own business?
Yeah, the vacation test is probably the best one. And really, the goal should be to go and actually take longer and longer vacations and look for where a business falls down. Another one is if you survey your customers and ask them why they do business with you. What you want to make sure is you hear things about your company, not you personally. So I do business with this company because it offers a great product, or it offers on-time delivery, or it's a leading piece of technology. You don't want to hear things like, well, I love Bob. Bob's always treated me well. You don't want to hear those sort of personal stories around loyalty to the owner, because obviously they then become integral to the business.
What, in a nutshell, are some of the key steps in transferring value from the owner to the business? What should the business owner be doing in order to make sure the business is less reliable on themselves?
Well, first, it's identifying something, as I shared earlier, that's teachable, valuable, repeatable. The second step is really focusing on recurring revenue. As long as the business is dependent on the owner to be the rainmaker, the business has very little value. The trick is to get reoccurring revenue built in the business. The insurance companies have known this for years, where you sell the insurance policy, but it's really the annuity stream long term that makes the insurance brokerage valuable. It's really the reoccurring revenue model. I'm a big red wine drinker. I'm a member of a couple red wine clubs. They got me hooked, and every year I re-up my membership. People can predict out the business into the future, because an acquirer is going to look at your company and just look into the future and say, where are the revenues going to come from? And so reoccurring revenue is the real secret sauce to separating a business owner personally from their company.
Now, John, when you sold your last business, you did stay on with a company that acquired it for a period of time, and this is often called the management contract. How long should a business owner be prepared to stay on after his or her company is acquired?
It all depends on how dependent your company is on you. And the goal, of course, is to try to make your business less dependent on you personally. In that case, if you've really done the heavy lifting and you've got a product which is teachable, valuable, repeatable, and you're merchandising it, a product that's got revenue, you probably won't have to stay on more than maybe it's a 6-month or a 1-year transition period. More likely is that there will be some long-term loyalty to the owner, that the new acquirer is going to want to try to monetize or sort of evolve to their organization. And I think a two to three year kind of management contractor earnout is a little bit more typical, where there's a bit of a gradual process. And then companies that are heavily dependent on the owner, I think of the advertising agencies, where it's the creative director who's the kind of brains behind the business. I mean, I've heard of situations where those earnouts can be as long as 7 years. And again, dangerous to give up your ownership in a business in return for what is essentially a job with some perks possibly 7 years down the road. So you want to make sure your business is not in that category, that you've transferred the loyalty from you personally into the business. And again, I think recurring revenue is probably the single most important thing to think about.
So, John, one of the things that business owners who hope to sell should know is that the process of selling a business is far more emotionally draining than they would normally expect. It's not a cut and dried transaction. And in fact, in an effort to come to the best possible price, the buyer will often basically tell you that your baby is ugly. What was the process like for you, and what advice can you share on managing that emotional drain with the listeners of the Business Coach Podcast?
It is an enormously emotionally draining process. And what I would recommend is that you hire a mergers and acquisitions professional. I'm not an M&A guy, so this isn't a veiled plug. I don't sell businesses for a living, but I think they're worth their weight on a lot of different levels. But one of them is such an important issue, and that is that you raise, that is, the emotional impact. And having an M&A broker be a buffer or an intermediary between you and the buyer, I think just gives you that cushion that you sometimes need to cool off and to take things less personally. Because again, you're right, when somebody criticizes your business, it is like being told your baby is ugly. And so I think having a broker to be that intermediary is a critical one. I remember a great Canadian entrepreneur years ago told me, Greg Clark, the guy who founded College Pro Painters, years ago said, one of the tricks, I think, to entrepreneurship is not to ramp up so high on the highs and so low on the lows. And he had a mantra that he repeated to himself during the College Pro years, which was, it's never as good as it seems on the best day and never as bad as it seems on the worst day. And I think that also helps, is having that that sense of trying to temper the overall emotional experience. And that would apply to just running a company, not just selling a company, but entrepreneurship in and of itself is a very personal way to make your living. And I think trying to moderate those emotional highs and lows is a key to success in the long term.
John, thanks for sharing your experiences and advice with the Business Coach Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
John Warlow is a serial entrepreneur and the author of Built to Sell, Creating a Business That Can Thrive Without You. You'll find his website at builttosell.com. That's it for this episode of the Business Coach Podcast. Be sure to check out other episodes, which you can download from bmo.com/coach, profitguide.com, and iTunes. For other tools to help you build your business, visit the BMO Smart Steps for Business community at bmo.com/smartbusinessowners. Until next time, I'm Ian Portsmouth, the editor of Profit Magazine, wishing you continued success.